Well, coming out of the days of unleavened bread, we do think about moving forward. I hope everybody had a wonderful Passover and days of unleavened bread. Just out of curiosity, how many individuals had the opportunity to eat leaven during the days of unleavened bread? Didn't say ate leaven, but had the opportunity to eat leaven, but had to refuse it. Anybody had, where just had to, just, I ain't going there, you know. You know, or found that there were times where you just had to stop, you just had to turn away from it or purchasing it. It's amazing, but it seems like each time at work, where I work, that people will randomly bring in Chex Mix, donuts, cookies. Never fails, normally won't do that. And then you get this peer pressure to indulge in cookies. At least that's the way it was in my workplace. And one in particular was a manager. We had this meeting. And right during the days of unleavened bread, oh, she's going to wow everybody with her famous cookies. And then as you come into the meeting room, she's kind of wanting to twist your arm to take one, you know. So it's like, wow, only during the days of unleavened bread. But, you know, I'm sure everybody has their stories of where they've had to avoid leaven, put that sin away, say no to it. I even remember one year. I wasn't tempted to eat the leaven, but I was driving down the road and it was on the last day of unleavened bread and I thought, oh, there's some bad roadkill right in the middle of the road. And then I got closer. It was bread kill. It was a big loaf of bread, right? And I was like, what? You know, what are the odds on that? So I mean, I wasn't tempted to go pull over and, you know, throw it in the back of the car, but you know, it does remind us, though, it's amazing how God picks the perfect analogies for sin and leaven, and then we are faced with these different scenarios to put it out of our lives, but representing sin. You know, but it does remind us of how guarded we have to be to sin, what strategies we have to keep sin away from us. You know, we actually proactively keep from sin. Proactively, we don't put ourselves in a situation to eat the leavened bread. We don't go out to eat all the time at Pizza Hut and try to eat the salad bar, you know, and that's an application for us in regards to sin. We stay away. We proactively look for ways to avoid sin. And then we're told to be aware, to avoid sin. But one thing that it taught us in coming out of the days of unleavened bread is that we do face a battle with sin. There's a battle that's taking place with sin. And it just reminds us of what type of battle that we ongoing have as we press forward. Let's turn to Ephesians 6 and verse 12. Ephesians 6 in verse 12. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness and of the age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. You know, we were reminded by this verse of who we are wrestling against and the evil that we do face. We wrestle against it. And, you know, the word here with wrestle, it's a rather descriptive way, and it kind of describes the battle and the warring that takes place with us trying to overcome evil and vice versa. But the Greek word is pale or pali, and it's a contest between two in which each endeavors to throw the other. The winner is decided when the victor is able to hold his opponent down with his hand upon his neck. It's a very descriptive word that's being used here. But if you've ever seen a cheetah or a lion go after a prey, and when they catch that prey, the first thing that the animal will do is go for the neck. It cuts off the air supply. It puts it into a submission hold. And, you know, it's a very descriptive word that is used, but it is used to illustrate a Christian struggle with the power of evil and with sin. You know, we are to wrestle against it in a way to battle it, to win, to put it into submission, so to speak, a submission hold. When we were baptized, we put sin to death, so to speak, put it out of our lives, and that's where we want it to lay. We want it to be dead in the water. Turn to Colossians 3, and this is more of a platform of what I would like to speak on today, but it's not exactly. I more so want to talk about moving forward, but this is just a platform kind of setting up that we face a battle, and there's some descriptive words here that show us, you know, what we're to do with sin. And I kind of want to talk about the attitude that we have as we battle sin. Colossians 3 and verse 1. If then you are raised with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ is, sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. It's talking about being raised with Christ, being raised from that watery grave, that we were baptized and raised with Christ, then our mind, as it says, it's to be different. We are to have more of the mind of Christ. There's a battle taking place in our minds. We had a sermonette in Kansas City. It was a good sermonette, but he used the analogy. Well, I don't know if it's an analogy, but he thought it'd be a good idea if we all had shock collars every time we had a bad thought, if it would go off, maybe instead of training that mind. He was kind of trying to bring the point across that, you know, there is something going on in the mind, and you don't know what everybody is facing inside that mind, but there's a battle that's taking place. And really, we don't want to have the shock collar where, you know, you see somebody jerk their head or what, you know, it just wouldn't. God doesn't do it that way, where it's out in the open, but he knows there is a warring going on. We want our minds to be more like the mind of Christ. Let's go on to verse 3. For you died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, appears, then you will appear with him in glory. Therefore, put to death the members which are on earth, fornication, uncleanliness, passion, evil desires, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Drop down to verse 8. Again, you know, we're to put to death those things. Another descriptive word in verse 8. But now you yourselves are to put off all these things: anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy language out of your mouth. So we're told here what to do with sin, where it's to be in this battle. We're to put it to death. It's to stay in the past. We see parallels with the Israelites passing through the Red Sea. And, you know, as we know, the crossing of the Red Sea, it does parallel a type of baptism as they go through that water. And this kind of crossed my mind, and maybe it's always, you know, been on your mind or understood it in this way, but it kind of hit me more this, as preparing this message. But you think about the enemy, which was the Egyptian army, and that's symbolic of sin. You know, they were buried in the water, and they died in the water. God could have had them taken away in a variety of other ways. It could have been a whirlwind. He could have just took them away that way. But, you know, that Egypt, that type of, you know, the type of sin that was following them, where did it stay? After they went through that water, after they went through, which was a symbolic of baptism, you know, they were dead in the water. And that's where we want our sin to stay. We want it to be dead in the water. We don't want it to come with us. We want to take steps forward, moving towards that promised land. Now, we all realize and probably have gone over in detail during the days of Unleavened Bread some of the failures of Israel. You no doubt have reviewed some of those shortcomings and why they weren't able to move forward, how hard it was for them to move forward. But, you know, we do realize they did not have God's Spirit at that time. It made it very hard for them to move forward. I think sometimes we focus on that maybe a little, you know, we do focus on that quite a bit, because they needed God's Spirit to have that right mind moving forward. But they had a part to play in it too. God was readily available to help. He was right there. And we don't want to forget that they had a very special relationship, and they did not seek God as they should have. They were cowardly in moving forward with that attitude. He was right there after all that he had done for them. He was ready to help. heard about manna in the sermonette. He was giving them anything that they needed. He would give them quail after they didn't like the manna. But, you know, he was very near to them. He was there for strength, and there to help. So why weren't they able to leave Egypt behind and move forward? Why were they not able to do that? And one of the reasons was they lacked courage to move forward. There were many examples of cowardly responses or complaining to Moses and responding to God's deliverance through cowardly actions. It was their lack of courage and faith, and it hindered their ability to move forward in a positive way. Courage is very necessary in moving forward, especially when it comes to overcoming sin. That's what I would like to focus on today, is the courage that it takes to overcome sin. Obviously, you know, our courage is seeking God's help. That's what gives us our courage, and we'll touch on that a little bit later. But there is a courage that we need to have as we strive to overcome sin. In this physical life, it takes a lot of courage in certain areas to overcome obstacles that we face. There are certain obstacles where that courage is totally necessary. Just recently, little Jonathan has been learning how to ride a bike without any training wheels. And you kind of forget about that first time, because once you, what do they say? Once you learn how to ride a bike, you never forget. And you kind of, you know, you forget the challenges that you had at the very beginning. I can remember, I kind of remember the beginning part, because we had a pretty steep hill with some grass and, you know, making those tumbles. But, you know, getting back on the bike, the courage that it takes to get back on the bike and to have a short memory. You know, Jonathan, you know, he doesn't ride it perfectly now, but he's striving to ride it perfectly later on. And it takes courage to keep getting back on the bike, and he's making progress. Think about those in the leadership club. And we have a leadership club in Kansas City with speaking. And, you know, speaking is one of the most dreaded and feared things to do. You know, you hear all the statistics on where public speaking is on the list of things. And I think number two is what people fear most after public speaking is death, I think was that. So that's one of the statistics. So, you know, there's always that thought, what if your mind goes blank, all the speakers, you know, what, you don't trust yourself at all. And, you know, it takes courage to keep going through it, keep pushing along. What if you misspeak? And what if you do, you know? Do you just sit down? Because that's what you would like to do. You just quit, but just sit down, that's it. But there are certain things that take courage to keep moving forward. And the same with past sins. You know, we want our past sins to stay in the past. We can't dwell on the past. We want it to stay in the past. We need short memory of past sin. The Israelites longed for Egypt. You know, they practically begged to go back to Egypt. And because they had that desire to go back, they had a very hard time moving forward. They needed short memory of Egypt and the idolatry that surrounded them. It takes courage to have short memory of past sins. But God can really, he can help us to overcome, and he can help us to move forward in that way. Philippians 3. In verse 13. Philippians 3 and verse 13. Brethren, I do not count myself to have apprehended, and he's talking about apprehended perfection in the prior verse in verse 12, or attain perfection, but I do not count myself as apprehended that perfection. But one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forward to the things which are ahead. You know, we always say that short-term memory loss or short is a bad thing. When it comes to sin, we want to have that short memory. We want to put it away and move forward. We forget those things, as Paul says, that are behind, and we reach forward for the things ahead. We choose not to dwell on the past. And there's a focus on the goal, on the aim, the end result. You know, who is the one that wants us to dwell on the past? Satan. God wants us to leave it in the past, leave it dead in the water, let the past be past. Have you ever known someone who has a short-term memory attribute, or it's an attribute? And obviously I'm not talking about one who just forgets all the time or puts the keys in the fridge or what, you know, whatever it is that, but, you know, somebody that is very willing to let the past be the past as far as being able to forgive or letting someone else move forward. What a blessing that is to have a friend like that, where maybe they've been wrong, but they don't dwell on it, or maybe they don't bring up your past sins or blunders. You know, there are certain individuals that hold, you know, your past over your head and guilt someone out as they try to move forward. You know, we do need friends and family members that allow us to move forward, and letting that past be the past, encouraging them to move forward. And, you know, there are individuals that it's a challenge for them to do that. And there are situations that would be very challenging to do that. But there is one way, one attitude, one philosophy that leads to bitterness, and there's one that leads to peace. And obviously, that one that has that short memory, is very willing to forgive, it's very helpful in moving forward. But we do have to let the past be the past in all aspects. Why did the Israelites get stuck in the wilderness for 40 years? They did not have a short memory of the past. They begged to go up, out. They begged to go back. That one point I was reading, and we'll get to that here in a minute, but at one point they said, just let us die, you know, let us go back there and die. And, there, it seems like the thinking was just not logical in any way. But in moving forward, you know, they did not, going into the promised land or having that opportunity, they did not want to face the giants. They did not want to face, potential battles. They lacked courage. And as you think about, there were battles that they were going to have to face. And we can, you know, apply this to battling sin. Everybody is going to have spiritual giants that they have to face, or, battles that we go into, but we do have to have the courage to move forward so that we can get closer to that inheritance. We need the courage of Caleb and Joshua in pressing into the promised land. The name Caleb in most books mean, or most baby name books, it means bold and courageous. And I liked my name growing up until I talked with some kids at school, and they said, your name doesn't mean bold and courageous. They had a baby book out. It means dog. And I was like, I think it means bold and courageous. And they're like, no, it means dog. And then I looked at it, and we just had two different translations. And so there are, on the name, you know, some mean dog and some means bold and courageous, or some show it that way. But if you look into the one where it says dog, and I heard a sermon given by a minister on that, but the type of dog he was talking about was more like a junkyard dog, is what he was saying, and, you know, one that had this courage. And so I'm sticking with the courage and that one, and I guess if I want to be applied as a junkyard dog, that's okay too. But, you know. But they had, Caleb and Joshua had courage in moving forward. You know, they wanted to move forward. They wanted to face the enemy, trusting that God was going to give them the victory. They were going to overcome that enemy. And as we think about overcoming sin, you know, we don't want to have that type of courage to battle, where we think God is going to give us the victory over this. He's going to help us to overcome. And let's go to Numbers 13 in verse 27. You have to be careful about talking about the name Caleb now, because there's another Caleb in here. So, you know, like what I ruined for Caleb, for me, is going to ruin. It's a good name. I think it's a very good name. Courage. All right. Numbers 13 and verse 27. We know the story very well of Caleb and Joshua. And, you know, could you imagine having their type of courage, though? And they had excitement about what they had saw. And to actually see the land in its fullness and think God is going to bless us with an extraordinary blessing. You know, how awesome. And basically their thought was, it's as good as ours. They had confidence. Whatever obstacle was in front of them, that was not what they were dwelling on. God was going to help them to overcome. And that was, he actually uses that word, to overcome the enemy. Overcome. Let's take a look. Let's first start where we see the cowardly response from the other spies. But in verse 27, then they told him and said, "We went to the land where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. And the Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites, and the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites, and all the otherites." No, that didn't say that. "They dwell by the sea and along the banks of the Jordan." So they were, where was God in the picture at that point? They were focusing on the ites. They were worried about the enemy that they could potentially go to battle with, and that was where their focus was. God was not in the picture. Verse 30, "Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, 'Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it.'" We are able to overcome it. And you know, I do want to kind of apply this in the fact that before they were going to have to, or be able to enter into the promised land, they were going to have the courage to move forward. And I think that there is some parallel to sin in that way. You know, we can't stay where we are. We can't stay in the present. We have to move forward. We have to face those spiritual giants. We have to face whatever it is, and we need to overcome it. And God will help us to overcome it. So after that, how did they respond? How did they respond to the courage to move forward? Chapter 14 and verse 1. "So all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron. The whole congregation said to them, 'If only we had died in the land of Egypt.'" Let's go back. Let's die there. I mean, if you're that close to receiving just an incredible blessing, you know, wouldn't you want to move forward? "If only we had died in the wilderness." Yeah, that sounds much better. "Why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt?" So they said to one another, "Let us select a leader and turn to Egypt." Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. Very distraught, Moses and Aaron. Verse 6, but let's hear Joshua's response. "Joshua, son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes." You know, they're grieved at their response. "And they spoke to all of the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, 'The land we pass through to spy out is exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, he will bring us into the land and give it to us, a land that flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread.'" You know, I mean, let's eat these guys for breakfast. After the days of unleavened bread, referring to them as bread. Okay, sorry, that was a bad one. But basically saying they're ours for the taking. We can't fear them. He's going to give us the victory. Well, it's as good as done in their minds. They had courage. And then their response to those very confident and trusting words. And the congregation said, "Let's stone them with stones." Now the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the meeting before all the children of Israel. Now, I mean, the response was, we would rather murder somebody who has confidence and courage to move forward than to even think about having courage themselves. "Let's stone them." And so God said, you know, you want to go back. You want to stay in the wilderness and die. I'm not going to force you into receiving a blessing. I am not going to force you to move forward. Verse 16. And this really shows a little bit about, you know, God's desire to bring them into the land. It wasn't that he wanted them to stay and refuse and dig their heels in. Because the Lord was not able to bring this people to the land which he swore to give them, therefore he killed them in the wilderness. He wasn't able to. He wanted to bring them in. He can't, he's not going to force them. You know, and we think about ourselves too. He's not going to force us to move forward and receive a blessing. You know, and he's not going to force us. But he wants us to. He was wanting to bring them into that land. Well, they lost the battle before they even engaged in the battle out of fear. You know, it paralyzed them. They had an attitude that I can't overcome. I can't overcome this. You know, it's very easy to see how this might apply to overcoming sin. You know, we don't want to have a defeatist attitude when it comes to overcoming sin. God does have the strength to deliver us. He has delivered us. But he has the strength to continue to deliver us from our spiritual battles that we face. He can help us to overcome. Do we truly believe with all of our hearts that God will help us to conquer the battles that we face? I've known different individuals who are striving to overcome whatever it was. You know, over certain, some individuals, it was long periods of time. They went to God to help, and that, you know, after crying out to God, I know where different individuals say they never were tempted in that way again. And he gave them the strength to move forward and to actually overcome it, where it never became an issue anymore. You know, they truly overcame with God's help. Do we believe that he can do that with whatever that we face? You know, he's healed individuals' minds and given them the strength to overcome different situations. God can do that. We can't. And we do need to realize we need his help to do that. Do we have the courage to go to him? Now, I wonder how many times that God is thinking, I'm right here. You know, just like he was with the children of Israel. I'm right here. Come to me. I will give you the help. I will give you the power to overcome this. Do we believe that he has the power to help us in that way? I mean, that was his attitude towards Israel. I brought you out from sin, and I will continue to give you the help that you need in moving forward. I'm right here. Come to me. Ask for help. Psalms 81. Psalms 81 in verse 10. We'll just read verse 10 and verse 16. Psalm 81 and verse 10, and as we read the words, you'll recognize the song as well. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Open wide your mouth and I will fill it. You know, I am the Lord who brought you out from the land of Egypt. Hear, O Israel, open wide your mouth. We know the song. I surely will fill it. You know, I'll continue to give you what you need. Verse 16. He would have fed them also with the finest of wheat, and with honey from the rock, I would have satisfied you. You know, I would give you satisfaction. I would give you what you need. I would continue to give you those things. Do we believe that God will give us the satisfaction that we need? The peace of mind that we need? Or do we feel like our needs are too big? Our needs are too big to fill. The void is too big. Or do we have courage to seek God out and believe that he can fill our need? We believe he is strong enough to bury any emotions or wrong desires that anybody could have. He can satisfy any void that we have. When it came down to the new generation being able to actually enter into the promised land, what was God's instructions? And he emphasized this over and over again. What was his instruction to Joshua in moving, taking those people into the land? Joshua 1. Joshua 1 and verse 1. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, you and all the people, to the land which I am giving to them, the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given you, as I said to Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and the great sea towards the going down of the sun shall be your territory. Verse 5, no man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. Verse 6, be strong and be of good courage, for to this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Reemphasized again, verse 7, only be strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded you. Do not turn from the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go. So there is emphasis in moving forward. Look, you've got to be courageous in this. Move forward. I will never leave you or forsake you. Where was their courage to be in? It wasn't in their own strength, but that courage was at, he's there. He's not going to leave you. He's not going to forsake you. And move forward. You're going to face challenges. You're going to face battles, but I will be there. I'm giving you the land. Have the courage to move forward. When you think about David and Goliath, David had so much courage in that battle against Goliath because he knew God was backing him up. It wasn't because he felt like he was, you know, just such a strong man. He knew that God was backing him. And even the words that he would say, it was all about Goliath and the Philistines' disrespect to God. And he knew God was going to take care of him. At different times he said, can you believe these Philistines defiling the God in the way they are? That they're defiling the armies of the living God. Who should defy the armies of the living God? Do they not know who they're going against, basically? So it wasn't in his, he just had a great, great artillery package, I guess, and he thought, you know, this slingshot should really do the trick. Yeah, that wasn't where his courage was coming from. You know, the other individuals, though, with David, I think they had lost sight of God in a certain way. I mean, they really feared that David was going into basically a death march. And, you know, they were saying, put on armor. Saul said, put the armor on. He put it on and said he couldn't walk in it. And I'll just take it off, you know. What was the word that he used? I don't know. Anyways, it said it hadn't been tested. He couldn't walk in it. He just took it off. You know, no more armor. But he had the courage going into the battle against a fearless giant. What was his courage? Wasn't liquid courage. I didn't, you know, how they always say before you ask somebody out on a date, you need a glass of wine or something. That liquid courage to ask a girl out. No. It wasn't his state-of-the-art artillery. So his courage was in God. And he had full trust that he had the upper hand going into the battle. I think it's interesting because, you know, sportscasters, they always refer to these David and Goliath matchups in basketball or whatever. And I think it's kind of ironic that they use that term. You know, it's like here's Lambeth going against Duke or whatever. It's a David and Goliath matchup. And you know they're referring to Duke as the powerhouse, you know, Goliath. And then you have little whatever it is, school. But really, I mean, if you think about it, who really had the upper hand going into the battle with David and Goliath? And who had the upper hand? Who was the large favorite going into that? And it was David. You know, Vegas needed to be betting on him going in. He had the upper hand. And we always say, well, it's David and Goliath, you know. But But this is the same attitude that we have as we strive to overcome sin, as we strive to conquer sin, as we battle with it, those spiritual Goliaths. David needed some of his courageous battlefield attitude as he faced his own spiritual Goliath in covetousness. Let's turn to Hebrews 13. Hebrews 13 and verse 5. Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have. For he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. So we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me? You know, I never really had looked into how covetousness, you know, correlates with God will never leave me or forsake me. But that is, you know, we're reminded not to have covetousness. And what is going to give us that courage in moving forward is knowing that he will never leave us or forsake us. It helps with the attitude of covetousness. You know, why is that? Why does that attitude help in covetousness? You know, many times with covetousness, there's a longing for something else because there is a void that one is trying to fill. If I just had this or that, I would be happy. Or, you know, if I just had this emotional need filled, I would be happy. Or the need for physical wants, whatever it may be. But yet we're to trust that he is able to give us what we need in all aspects. You know, to David, the pull seemed very overwhelming to the fact that he acted in the wrong way. Did he look to God to be his helper as he did with that physical battle that he had against Goliath? Eventually, you know, he was able to overcome what he faced. He did overcome it in time. But at the time, you know, he wasn't able to because he didn't look to God in that same way for the help. But after David had sinned through the prophet Nathan, God was helping him to see that fault a little more clearly. And notice what God says in 2 Samuel 12. You know, he had coveted. He ended up murdering. He sinned against God. And God brings back an important point to David that would have helped him to overcome the covetousness. 2 Samuel 12 and verse 7. Let's pick it up in the middle of verse 7. This is through the prophet Nathan, God speaking to David. Thus says the Lord God of Israel, I anointed you king over Israel. I delivered you from the hand of Saul. I gave you your master's house and your master's wives into your keeping, and gave you the house of Israel and Judah. And if that had been too little, I also would have given you much more. If you would have looked to me, I would have given you more. I would have helped you not give in to that covetousness. Why have you despised the commandment of the Lord to do evil in his sight? You have killed Uriah the Hittite with the sword. You have taken his wife to be your wife, and have killed him with the sword of the people of Ammon. You know, so God was stressing to him, I would have given you, if you would have just looked to me for the help, gone to me, I would have helped you to overcome that. Philippians 4 and verse 11. Philippians 4 and verse 11. Not that I speak in regards to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am in to be content. I know how to be abased and I know how to be abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Again, you know, Paul has learned to be content. He's learned to not be covetous, we could say. I mean, if you're content, you're not going to have that covetous attitude. But where does he say, where's his strength? But I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So again, that's where the help is coming from to combat any sort of covetousness. And really, in this situation, he would know, as he was right, this was a prison epistle. And he would know. He was writing this in prison, this letter, he was in prison. So if anyone would know how to be content in a very difficult situation and know how to have that type of contentment and strength, it was through, he would know. Well, you probably heard about the star football player recently indicted for murder. I mean, it just kind of shows that you can have a, I mean, he was getting $40 million contract. And, to have a $40 million contract, he had the riches, he had that lifestyle most people would think is, what you would want in this life. And yet he still did not have the contentment. Otherwise, why would he have done what he, why would he do what he did? Obviously, he wasn't content with what he had, and to murder somebody and to commit that type of sin. But he was sentenced to life in prison without parole. So he was not content with what he had before, and he's going to learn to be content in a much different situation. He wasn't, anybody that ends up living that type of lifestyle, obviously they weren't happy with what they had. They wouldn't be doing those things. There were some major issues going on. But you think you can have all the riches in life, but it still doesn't mean you'll have contentment. Think about the words of King Solomon in Ecclesiastes 2. Ecclesiastes 2. Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 10. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and it was my reward from all my labor. Then I looked on all the works which my hands had done, and on the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity, and grasping for the wind, there was no profit under the sun. So after all that he had, said he didn't have profit in that. And at the end of the book, we know where his focus was and, what's the conclusion of the whole matter? To fear God, keep his commandments. That's man's all. God is the one constant. He's the one that holds everlasting blessings. That's where our hope is. That's what drives us. And as we move forward, if our hope is in God, and that constant, if that's where our focus is, then we will be strengthened. Turn to Psalms 31. We are starting to wind things down too. Psalms 31 and verse 23. Oh, love the Lord, all you his saints, for the Lord preserves the faithful and fully repays the proud person. But be of good courage, and he will strengthen your heart, all you who hope in the Lord. Again, when courage is placed in the right area, we can be strengthened. All you who hope in the Lord, you can have that courage and you will be strengthened. We definitely need to be strengthened as we move forward. And so much of, what we need and that courage that we need to have, God desires for us to have that as well. But so much of it has to do with the understanding that God will never leave us or forsake us. That is where our courage comes from. And I was well into preparing the message, and then I happened to read the member's letter, and I just wanted to quote a little excerpt from Mr. Frank's last member letter. It struck me in preparing it, but he said, "The Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread teach us that anything is possible. They show us that we don't have to be depressed or discouraged when we discover sin in our lives. Jesus Christ hasn't forgotten us, and he hasn't forsaken us." And then he referred to Matthew 28 and verse 20, which is basically the church's commission, where Christ says, "Lo, I'm with you always, even to the end of this age," or even until the end of the age. So it's very encouraging as we think about, you know, he's not going to quit on his end. He's going to uphold his commitment. However, just like the Israelites were, you know, he's not going to force anybody to move forward. And there is a willingness that we need to have as we move forward. He's not going to drag someone into a blessing. There has to be a willingness from God's people to move forward. So as we go ahead and wrap it up, you know, not only about three more scriptures to go, I want to take a look and just answer one more question, and that is, are we ready to move forward? Are we ready to move forward? Are we willing to move forward? Because it does take willingness on our part as well as we move forward. He's committed. We need to make sure that we are willing. We don't want to drag our heels or dig our heels in the sand. 1 Peter 1 and verse 13. Therefore, gird up the loins of your mind. Be sober and rest your hope fully upon the grace that is to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, not conforming yourselves to the former lusts as in your ignorance, but as he who has called you to be holy, you also be holy in all your conduct. For it is written, be holy, for I am holy. The term girding up your loins, or gird up the loins of your mind, gird up your loins, roll up your sleeves, have a desire and a willingness to move forward. Always be ready to move away from sin. And the Holman Bible Dictionary, I think it really brings out girding up your loins. It really helps us understand what we're saying. But it literally means to tuck the outer garments into one's belt. You know, so that was what they wore long robes traditionally, and they had to cinch up that garment in order to be able to run. And they had to tuck that in. So they would gird up the loins. This would enable them to be ready to run. Needed to cinch it up. So you're basically, you know, you're prepared for action. You're ready to move forward. Passover night, the night that the children of Israel, well, the night they had Passover, obviously they left the next morning. But they were told that night to gird up their loins. In Exodus, you can read about that. But he says, you know, basically, get ready to leave in haste. Get ready to leave Egypt. Get ready to move forward. And they were also to gird up their loins. They were getting ready to leave. You know, as for us, do we remember what type of zeal that we had at baptism? You know, anytime we think back to that time, most are very fired up, so to speak, and you think, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to get to work. I'm going to, you know, conquer everything that I have to conquer in a couple weeks. No, I mean, you know, you're ready to move forward. You're ready to press forward. And that's the type of attitude that we need to have as we press towards God's kingdom. Hebrews 12 and verse 1. Hebrews 12 and verse 1, therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin that so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. You know, we think about girding up your loins and, you know, basically telling us to, so we aren't going to trip when we run. We want to gird up our loins. And it's also saying, so that we can run, we need to lay aside the other weights, that sin which can easily ensnare us, so we can run with endurance the race that is set before us. In conclusion, let's turn to one final scripture that Moses basically gives Moses' words to Joshua in preparing to lead the people finally into the promised land. They were right up at the end and finally about to enter in to that promised land. And just like us, you know, we are getting much closer to Christ's return. And we know on the time scale that we are in, we're just a blip on the map, but we know that we're definitely getting closer and living in those end times. We can think about the words that were given to Joshua in preparing to move forward. And they should also resonate in our ears as well. There's a similar context in regards to almost receiving or about to receive an unbelievable blessing. Deuteronomy 31 and verse 1. Deuteronomy 31 in verse 1, then Moses went and spoke these words to all Israel, and he said to them, I am 120 years old today. I can no longer go out and come in. Also the Lord has said to me, you shall not cross over this Jordan. The Lord your God himself crosses over before you. He will destroy these nations from before you, and you shall dispossess them. Joshua himself crosses over before you, just as the Lord has said. And the Lord will do to them as he did to Sihon and to Og, the kings of the Amorites in their land, and he destroyed them. The Lord will give them over to you, that you may do to them according to every commandment in which I commanded you. Verse 6, be strong and of good courage. Do not fear nor be afraid of them, for the Lord your God, he is the one who goes with you. He will not leave you nor forsake you. Then Moses called Joshua and said to him in the sight of all Israel, be strong and of good courage, for you must go with this people to the land which the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give to them and you and cause them to inherit. And the Lord, he is the one who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you nor forsake you. Do not fear nor be dismayed. Now, our final aim is to be inheritors of the kingdom of God, to rule with Christ. And as we move forward, let us hold fast to the fact that God is with us on this journey, and we can have courage and faith that we need to overcome sin. Sin is our enemy. We will battle it to the end. There are spiritual Goliaths that we no doubt will face, but we will conquer it with Christ's help. We can do all things through Christ who strengthens us. This is the courage that we have to overcome sin.